Hello, welcome to the Travel Advice Show. Listen as travel experts Chris Newton and Jerry Fuller give advice on world destinations and discuss important travel topics that are valuable to any world traveler. Go to www.traveladviceshow.com where you can listen to this show and all previous shows, or even ask your travel questions. Now here are your hosts, Chris and Jerry.
Hi, welcome to the Travel Advice Show. How's everybody doing today? And today is May 5th, 2008. And today we have a great topic. We're going to be talking about Croatia and give travel advice. And if anybody is heading to Croatia or in the area, they can listen to the show and hopefully we'll give them some good tips. And I'm Chris Newton, one of the co-hosts, and my other co-host, Jerry Fuller. Would you like to introduce our guest and our explain more about the topic today, Jerry?
I would love to. We're really excited, again, to have the repeat guest, Cameron Hewitt, who is the senior editor, researcher, and co-author of many of the Rick Steves guidebooks. And Cameron, welcome. We're glad to have you back.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it's good to be back.
Yeah, welcome, Cameron. Yeah, that's great.
And we're going to talk about one of the most interesting and maybe some of the cities there, some most historic cities in Europe as far as all kinds of culture, and we're doing Croatia, as Chris said. And Chris, Cameron, who do you think might really enjoy going to Croatia as a vacation?
Well, these days, I think just about anybody can enjoy Croatia. It's really amazing how quickly Croatia has come on as a hot tourist destination. And sometimes it's just interesting to get some perspective, take the long view. 20 years ago, Croatia was part of communist Yugoslavia behind the Iron Curtain. 15 years ago, it was engaged in a really bloody war that took many lives and displaced many people. 5 years ago, it was struggling to kind of come back as a tourist destination that it had been in the past, and really trying to put itself back on the tourist map. And today, it is just red hot. People are flocking to Croatia from all over Europe, but also from all over North America and the world. It's just becoming one of the big hot spots in Europe. I would say even rivaling Prague in terms of how quickly it's become so popular. And the good news about that is, I guess the bad news, first of all, is that it's becoming more crowded than it was a few years ago. I've noticed every time I go back to Dubrovnik, which is about twice a year, every 6 months, let's say, the main drag is just that much more crowded. So that's sort of the bad news. The good news, however, is that the tourist infrastructure is really ramping up and taking great care of these guests. And 5 years ago, it was less crowded to travel in Croatia, but it was also more challenging because accommodation options were pretty miserable. Transportation was a little bit hard to patch together. And these days, it's just becoming like a finely tuned machine. Everyone's always been friendly there, and they speak excellent English, but there are more and more affordable accommodations, for example. It's not so much the monopoly it used to be. And they're adding lots of new boat connections, for example, high-speed boats hopping between the most popular island destinations that didn't exist a few years ago. You'd have to get on some hulking, basically, car ferry that would plot its way up and down the coast. Now there's high-speed catamarans for passengers that zip you from top spot to top spot. So I would say these days Croatia is easy to enjoy for anybody. It's a good alternative, though, for example, for people who, for example, have been to Italy or maybe want to go to Italy, but it's a little too expensive. Italy, as you probably know, has become more and more expensive the last 5 or 10 years as its popularity has increased. I mean, it's hard to get an affordable hotel room or dinner in places like Venice or Florence. And Croatia, while not a bargain basement necessarily, is still a fair amount cheaper than Italy. So, for example, it's a nice alternative for somebody who wants a Mediterranean destination that's a little bit cheaper but also very different. What I love about Croatia is it's got this wonderful Mediterranean and unmistakable Mediterranean character, but at the same time it has things about it that are unique. It's got this Slavic culture that mixes in and gives everything that happens there a very different flavor than what happens in Italy or Greece, for example. So I would say it's a great destination for someone who wants to go somewhere new, maybe someone who's spent time in Italy or Greece, wants to change a pace, and wants to maybe save a little money as well.
Mm-hmm. Fabulous. And I don't want to forget to ask this question, and I will probably forget, so I'm going to ask it now, but I want you to explain it later. if you were going to go to Croatia, when is the best time to go for you, and do you recommend for people going, and the worst time, and why for both?
It's a sort of a tricky question. It's a very important question, I should say, because Croatia is a highly seasonal destination. The time of year that you go has everything to do with the experience that you have there. In terms of the crowds, first of all, but also in terms of the ease of travel and the prices. So, for instance, the peak season in Croatia is July and August, especially the second 2 weeks of July and the first 2 weeks of August. And while the weather is gorgeous at that time of the year, nice, hot, sunny Mediterranean weather, the downside is it's very crowded, and it is more expensive because all the accommodations in Croatia, whether it's a big hotel or a little B&B, they know the score and they raise their prices when the demand is up. And they know that summer is the most popular time, so everything's going to be, every accommodation is going to be 20 or 30% more expensive, for example, in July and August. You know, but there's pros and cons. There's it's the best time of year in terms of transportation connections. Some of these fast boats run at increased schedules during that time, but the trade-off is those boats are going to be more crowded, and you might have to get to the boat much earlier to make sure you get a seat, as opposed to if you kind of go in the shoulder season and you can walk on at any time. So I'd say July and August, I always compare it. It's sort of going to Croatia in July and August is like going to the beaches of Florida on spring break. You know, there's pros and cons. If you want that kind of crowded, you know, very popular scene, there's a reason why that's a popular destination. But if you want to get away from the crowds, that's not the time to go. My favorite time, on the other hand, for Croatia is June and September, more or less. They're kind of the best of both worlds, those 2 months, because the tourism is kind of at about 70 or 80% capacity, which means it's less crowded, prices are a little bit lower, but it's still enough that everything is open, and, you know, the boats are still running at good schedules. If you get too far off season, what happens specifically in the small towns along the coast is everything closes down. I've been in Croatia, some of these little coastal villages, usually it's sort of mid to late October, and from one day to the next, half the hotels and restaurants will simply close their doors for the winter. So if you show up in Croatia in November in the small towns, you might find one hotel and one restaurant basically open for the whole town. And everything else kind of gets shuttered and closed up. And a lot of people from the islands actually move into the interior for the winter. And it's the same thing in the beginning of the year, April and May. I've been in late April and found everything closed. Even through the middle and end part of May, things can be very quiet and things can be very, very more often closed. But then by the end of May, beginning of June is when things are pretty much opening up to full capacity. So there's this really narrow window that you want to aim for if you want to maximize your experience. Again, sort of the very end of May through the end of June, and then maybe the first couple weeks of September through the first couple weeks of October is, for me, the perfect time to go.
Excellent. Now, Croatia is not a huge country, but it's not something you can just walk around. But how would you recommend somebody going, especially the first time, go? Should they take an escorted tour? Can you rent a car? Do they have any train service or anything like that?
Well, there's different ways to handle it. I think tours are popular because it is it's an easy place to travel and it's accessible, but it's less familiar to a lot of especially North Americans. And so I'm also a tour guide. In addition to writing the Croatia guidebook, I lead our Adriatic tours that go to these destinations. And we get a lot of people who are very well traveled. They've traveled on their own to places like Italy or France or Spain, and they want one more Mediterranean experience, but they just want a little more help with that one added degree of unfamiliarity. It's just the language is a little less familiar. People are less likely to know a few words of Croatian than a few words of Italian. And I think a tour is a good bet for people who want to do it that way. But I would say it's a very easy place to travel independently. So I think tours are good for some people, but I think most people who are comfortable traveling in other parts of Europe will find that Croatia is not significantly more difficult. They're very accustomed to travelers, mostly Europeans, actually. That's who's always kind of done their holidays down in Croatia. But that infrastructure is also there for Americans. Once you're there, I would say a combination of transportation is your best bet. It depends on where you're going. Train lines are very limited, but for the routes they run, they're very helpful. I haven't mentioned Slovenia yet, but that's another country to the north of Croatia that I think ties in perfectly with a trip to Croatia, a very different place, which I'll talk about a little later. But in any event, the capital of Slovenia is Ljubljana, and there's a very convenient 2.5-hour train from there to Zagreb, which is the capital of Croatia. So for some of those trips, I would take the train. But the further south you get in Croatia, the fewer train options there are. In fact, the train tracks only take you as far south as Split, which is a big city on the coast, down the Dalmatian coast. And the gaps are filled in mostly with the buses for overland destinations. So there's a very good network of buses you can take around the country. And then boats work really well along the coast, specifically the Dalmatian coast. And that's where I was mentioning you have everything from these lumbering car ferries all the way to these speedy catamarans that are a great way to kind of connect the dots. As for car rental, you could rent a car for your whole trip, but as with a lot of places, there's areas of Croatia where a car is helpful, and there's parts of Croatia where it's kind of an expensive headache, and you have to deal with parking and this sort of thing. Regions that warrant a car would include the mountains of Slovenia, for example, which are a little harder to do efficiently by public transportation. The northern part of Croatia I really like, called Istria, which is a beautiful place with lots of small sites kind of tucked in the interior that are difficult to reach by public transit. Those kinds of places I would maybe rent a car even just for a day or two to enable you to see those regions the way they're best seen. And then make longer hops with trains or buses or cars, trains or buses or boats. Once you get down to the Dalmatian coast is another example. Split is sort of the northern gateway to the best part of the Dalmatian coast. If you're going south of Split, I would probably drop your rental car in Split if you've got one and do the rest by boat and bus, because that will get you right into the town centers of all the best places, and you don't have to deal with, first of all, finding parking in some of these twisty old towns. Dubrovnik, for example, which is the highlight of Croatia, is down at the southern tip, is a really difficult place to find affordable parking in, especially overnight. And then the other thing that you have to contend with is if you do want to take boats and you've got a car, you have fewer options because only some boats are car ferries. And for those, you often have to get there very early to make sure you can get your car on that boat. Depending on the season, I always tell people, ask at the local tourist office the day before, what time should I get my car to this boat to be sure I get on that departure. And it could be, sometimes they told me it could be 3 hours, maybe even 4 hours waiting in line just to be sure you get on that boat with your car. Whereas if you take the passenger boat that doesn't take cars, you might not have to wait at all. You could just walk right on, or worst case scenario, you might want to show up an hour ahead for certain boats in peak season. So if you have a car, it kind of constricts you once you're down on the coast where you want to be able to take more boats. But it can be helpful in those other areas I mentioned. So I would say sort of figure out where you want to go, and then don't assume that the same transportation works best for each connection. Think about which parts might be best by car, which by bus, which by train, which by boat, and kind of patch together something that maximizes your efficiency and what you're able to see and enjoy in that time.
Yeah, Cameron, you mentioned the boat transportation. Is that like a ferry line that goes along the coast that kind of connects all the towns along the coast there?
That's right. It used to be one big main line run by the national ferry company, the nationalized kind of government-run boat company, which was called Jadrolinija. And it used to be just one big car ferry that would leave Dubrovnik and literally over the course of 2 days would plod all the way up to the northern point of the coast, which is Rijeka. And that still is running, but now there's these other catamarans. Some of them run actually by private companies. But now there's some private companies that are trying to sort of come up with even better connections and really give the national line a run for its money. And these are high-speed catamarans that zip you in half the time or less between some of these destinations and are very smartly kind of scheduled. These days, you could do things that you could never do even 3 or 4 years ago, or even 2 years ago in some cases. You could get on a boat in the morning in Split, let's say, zip in an hour and a half to Hvar, which is one of the best little island towns there on the coast, spend 4 or 5 hours there, take a second boat, a high-speed boat, that zips you down to Korčula, which is the other, I would say, best of the Dalmatian islands, and get there in time for dinner. So you can have a really efficient sightseeing itinerary where you can see a lot if you know how to smartly link up these new boat options. You know, 5 years ago, you'd get on the big boat, it would take you twice as long to get to Hvar, and then you'd have to wait 2 days for the next boat to Korčula, for example.
Right. Wow.
So it's really becoming very efficient to kind of to use that, and just be aware that there's various options. In my guidebook and in most guidebooks, I've described the different options that you have. Check the national ferry company, Yadrolinia, first. I think their website is yadrolinia.hr, and that's the Y sounds are actually the letter J. So that's JADROLINIJA.HR. Check that first for the main company, but realize that you can maybe fill in the gaps in that schedule with some of these smaller companies that I mentioned in my book. One of them is called Crilo, for example, K-R-I-L-O. You could Google that, and that's a fast boat that connects some of the best islands a couple times a day in the summer.
Fantastic. Now, we need to spend some time, I guess, because I've been to Croatia probably 20 times ever since the late 60s, and absolutely love it. As you're saying, it's fantastic. But can we spend some time talking about some of the different cities? We've already mentioned two of the major islands, and but some of the cities that are must, that people have to go to, like Mostar, et cetera, and Dubrovnik.
Definitely. I think of it as, it helps, I think, to think of the Croatia, and when I say Croatia, I use that, I mean, I'm talking about Croatia, but there are other countries, neighboring countries, that used to be part of Yugoslavia along with Croatia. Of course, I think most people are aware that Croatia was one of six parts of this country called Yugoslavia that broke apart in the 1990s. And even though they're separate countries now, there are still some really, really exciting and worthwhile destinations that are just over the border and very easy to reach from Croatia. First of all, when I think of going to Croatia, I don't think about just staying in those borders. It's, I think, even essential and makes a far more rewarding trip if you can patch in some of these others. You mentioned Mostar, which is one of those. So first of all, think of it as sort of a whole sightseeing region as opposed to just one country. And you could call it the western part of the former Yugoslavia. It also helps to think of the area in sort of two zones. There's sort of a southern sightseeing zone and the northern sightseeing zone. Mm-hmm. The southern sightseeing zone is the Dalmatian coast and some interesting day trips from there. And the northern zone is Slovenia, which is a separate country, and then some parts of Croatia that are up there, like this region of Istria that I mentioned, that are worth exploring too. I'll start in the south because I think that's what most people think of first when they think of Croatia. That's the Dalmatian coast, which is about the southern third of the very long Croatian coastline. I think it's something like 1,000 miles longer, or even more than that, if you count all the inlets and islands and so forth. And in any event, there's sort of two big towns that anchor the Dalmatian coast. There's Split, which is the big, more kind of urban city up at the northern end. It's the transit hub, and the outskirts are pretty gloomy and industrial, but it's got an absolutely gorgeous old town that's built in the remains of an old retirement palace from the Roman Emperor Diocletian, literally a 4th century Roman palace. One of the biggest palaces that survived anywhere has been turned into the old town. It's not that the palace is in the old town, but the old town is the palace. It's literally built on the foundation of this palace. So anyway, Split has great sightseeing, Roman ruins and museums in this old Roman palace, but then it's also the transportation hub, so it's a great kind of transfer point and worth certainly at least part of a day, if not one or two days, to see its sights. And then the southern anchor of the Dalmatian coast is Dubrovnik, which is, I would say, the single best destination in Croatia for sure, if not the whole region. It's just this fantastic old town, unlike Split, which is very urban. Dubrovnik is an old town, like all of the little old towns sprinkled along in the Mediterranean, but it's on a vast scale, 10 times bigger than all these other old towns in Croatia. So it's this huge, vast old town with creaky old stone buildings and red roofs, surrounded by a stout wall that you can actually walk around the entire perimeter of this city wall with fantastic views, a sea of red rooftops on one side and the actual sea on the other side. Certainly the highlight of any trip to Croatia. Those are the two kind of endpoints of the Dalmatian coast and complement each other very well. In between are dozens of islands, several of which are well developed for tourist visitors. The two main islands and affiliated towns that are the easiest to reach and the most rewarding on a short visit, I mentioned already, one is called Hvar, H-V-A-R. It's kind of a tongue twister for English speakers, but it's pronounced Hvar. Which is very ritzy, upscale. They're really trying to develop this island town as sort of the Saint-Tropez or the Cannes of the Adriatic. It's becoming a yachting center, and they're building huge and super expensive top-of-the-line luxury hotels there. So it's kind of an expensive town to visit. Even regular restaurants are a little more expensive there, but it's got this kind of jet-set, ritzy kind of ambiance. The other town on an island that I like is called Korčula, K-O-R-C-U-L-A, Korčula. And that is a little bit more kind of old-fashioned. It's got a beautiful old town out on a peninsula, sort of like a mini Dubrovnik, also with an old city wall surrounding it. And Korčula is another kind of just delightful little island getaway. Both of these towns don't have a lot of heavy-duty sightseeing, but they're great for just relaxing and sunbathing and swimming in the crystal-clear Adriatic and this sort of thing. Those are the kind of the high points of the Croatian part of the southern Dalmatian coast. But there's two other countries that I would also recommend highly. One you mentioned is Mostar, which is this fascinating Bosnian city. It's across the border in Bosnia-Herzegovina. And Mostar is, Rick and I went there together, Rick Steves and I went there together in May, and he hadn't been since before the war, and we both agreed that it's the single most fascinating, rewarding, and appealing day trip from Dubrovnik, beyond even all these little islands I'm mentioning.
Right.
It's fascinating for a number of reasons. First of all, it's actually a Turkish town. It was a part of the former Yugoslavia that was Turkish almost all the way into the 20th century. So it's got very Turkish architecture. It's got an old town with sort of a bizarre market area, old Turkish bathhouses, for example, and mosques, lots of minarets, and still lots of practicing Muslims. So another reason we like it is it gives people who aren't often exposed to Islam a chance to go to a very friendly, familiar-feeling town that has lots of practicing Muslims, and you can actually go into a mosque and learn a little bit about that faith. And in the streets, you hear the call to prayer warbling back across the rooftops several times a day. The other really interesting thing about Mostar is it was really devastated in these recent wars of the 1990s. Most of the Croatian coast was unaffected. Only Dubrovnik itself was actually attacked in the war, and that's all been repaired since. But Mostar is still kind of putting itself back together. It was really torn apart by this war. The old town has been really restored, but it's a really thought-provoking place to travel because it's a combination of this sort of Turkish culture, the Muslim faith. At the same time, it feels completely European, completely Yugoslav, or, you know, not that different in terms of the way that people look and talk from Croatia. And then you've also got another layer of this recent history that's very, I think, interesting and not interesting, not to trivialize it, but it's something that really adds another dimension to your trip, kind of having to come to terms with what's going on there. And then the last little piece, I'd say the southern part of Croatia, just south of Dubrovnik, is another country called Montenegro. And this actually just declared its independence. It was the last of the republics that was kind of aligned with Serbia, and declared its independence only about 2 years ago. It was in May of 2006. So it's really literally Europe's youngest country. And if you go south from Dubrovnik, it's a very quick couple hours drive to the best part of Montenegro, which is a just gorgeous inlet that's really a fjord with steep mountains rising right out of the water called the Bay of Kotor. Works, I would say, perfectly as a one-day side trip from Dubrovnik. I would say comes in just after Mostar is the second best day trip from Dubrovnik. And it just gives you a great chance to see this spectacular scenery and to be in another country. Again, kind of you'll immediately know that you're in a different place and people have a different way of looking at things and speak a slightly different dialect, and the food and the culture and everything about it is clearly a different country. Incredible amount of diversity within a very short radius from the Dalmatian coast. So I'd say that's sort of the first chunk, the southern chunk of what you could do in Croatia. Did you have any questions about any of that stuff?
Well, no. I think you covered it beautifully. And I think if they don't go down to Kotor and Mostar when they're in Dubrovnik, I think they'd miss, as you mentioned, a phenomenal experience. And that's why I always just consider them as part of Croatia, because that, I mean, most people don't go like to Montenegro, because first of all, they haven't really heard of it, but they don't fly there and go there. They only heard of Dubrovnik, and they need to go to these other places. Some of the things that I want to talk about just a moment is one thing that I did on one of my trips in not great distances. In those days, it's more ferries. But I did a lot of bicycling. Do you recommend now that it's a little more modern, upscale, and a little faster pace, doing any bicycling or hiking or trekking trips?
If you're interested in that, you'll certainly find it in Croatia. I would say the infrastructure for cyclists is not quite where it is in parts of Western Europe. It's the tradition for Yugoslavia for visitors was mass tourism. So it would be people who'd come for 2 weeks, usually from Europe, let's say, and set up camp in a big giant resort hotel on the beach for a week and just basically sunbathe the whole time. And it, this sort of new idea of more active travel and bicycling and hiking and ecotourism and all of that stuff is something that that was very foreign in Croatia even a few years ago. It's starting to get a little bit better. I would say the southern part, you can certainly do it, especially if you're a very hardy biker and you can really handle a lot of ups and downs, because especially the southern part of Croatia, you've got sort of one main road that runs north to south along the coast. And anything that you go beyond that is going to be pretty steeply uphill because this whole part of Croatia is kind of squeezed between the Dinaric Mountains on one side and the Adriatic on the other. If you're gonna, so you could do that certainly, and especially if you want some of that kind of mountain biking in some altitude while you pedal, there's opportunities for that for sure. I'd say a little bit better area maybe if for more casual bikers or for just more level biking, maybe up in the north, Slovenia and this Istria, this little chunk of Croatia that sort of sticks down from Slovenia, it's actually part of Croatia though, is a lot more level and it's got more trees, it's more got more of sort of a continental climate, so it's not quite as dry and arid and hot as what you'll find down on the Dalmatian coast. But that sort of thing is really catching on, and a lot of the bigger towns like Split or maybe Dubrovnik or Ljubljana up in Slovenia, every time I'm there now, there's a new company that started up to help put travelers in touch with those kinds of experiences, sea kayaking, other kinds of adventure sports, just in the last 2 or 3 years, again, are becoming very popular in this part of Europe.
I know. We need to talk about food and water just for a moment in Croatia. Do you feel it safe to drink the water, especially a bottle of water, of course, but to drink the water and eat the food like lettuce and things like that?
Absolutely. I have drunk the tap water in all of these places I'm talking about, and I do every time I go, and I eat everything that they put in front of me, and I've never had a problem. Some people say in Bosnia-Herzegovina you should be a little more cautious. Certainly if you get a little further off the main tourist track, if you go beyond Mostar, you might want to be a little more cautious, but I take tour groups through these areas, and no one's ever gotten sick on my tours from things that they've eaten. It's there's none of those kind of public health concerns that you might have in places even further east.
I know. Yeah, it's very safe. It's a phenomenal destination. It's one of the most hidden, along with Slovenia, because you do want to spend some time on Slovenia, because I consider Slovenia a hidden gem of Europe. But Croatia is a little more touristy and a little more known, and Croatia is a hidden gem too, but it's a little less hidden. But let's talk a minute about Slovenia, because it is a phenomenal destination that people just really don't know about, particularly in North America.
You know, I agree completely. I am head over heels in love with Slovenia. Truth be told, I might even prefer it slightly over Croatia for its own reasons. It's kind of like if you have two kids, you can't really say which one you love more because you love them both equally but in different ways. But I have a real affection for Slovenia. Rick and I kind of think of, we think it's great. And on my tours, these tours that I do on the Adriatic, it's a 14-day trip that has 3 days in Slovenia and the rest of the time in Croatia and Mostar. And invariably at the end of the tour, people always say, oh, you know, we really could use more time in Slovenia. We didn't realize at the beginning of the trip how great it was, you know. So it's something that is always charms people who go there. Rick and I kind of think of, we use Croatia as a Trojan horse for Slovenia. That's why we did our book. It's called Croatia and Slovenia. Because we love to kind of, we know people want to go to Croatia. We also know that they deep down do want to go to Slovenia. They just don't know it yet that they want to go to Slovenia. And we know that if they do go, they'll thank us for it. Slovenia, what do I love so much about it? Wow, it's, for one thing, culturally, it's this wonderful mix of surrounding influences. If you look at a map of Slovenia, It borders Italy on the west, Austria on the north, and then, of course, Croatia on the south and east. And what I like to say is it's taken the best bits and pieces of each of those cultural worlds. When you think about it in sort of the pan-European sense, there's a very distinctive Italian culture. There's a very distinctive and very different Germanic culture that pervades also in Austria. And then there's the sort of Slavic, colorful Slavic culture that pervades in Croatia. Slovenia takes the Italian, the Germanic, and the Slavic and kind of blends it all together, keeps, I say, only the best parts, and it gets rid of the rest and ends up with just this wonderful combination of, for example, real kind of love for life and lazy cafe culture, the sort of Italian and Adriatic custom of knowing how to waste time artfully and gracefully. But they also have this running undercurrent of Germanic efficiency, so things work well and things run on time. And once you get down to Croatia, it's a wonderful place, but you have to kind of be on, we say, it's to be on island time once you get down to the Croatian coast. Things happen about the right time, but they don't happen right on schedule. It's a much more Mediterranean approach that way. Slovenia has the sort of joy of life from the Mediterranean, but everything also runs on time because they got that from the Germanic influence. I also think, for such a tiny country, I mean, it's 2 million people. It's about the size of New Jersey or half the size of Switzerland. It's got an incredible amount of diversity. The northwest of Slovenia has some of the most spectacular Alps that rival anything, I think, in Italy or Austria or Switzerland.
I agree.
Just in the northwest corner. And then you've got down in the southwest, they've got this tiny little stretch of coastline with actually a really pleasant little resort town of their own along the Adriatic. Ljubljana, the capital, for me, is one of the most delightful small cities in Europe, just for wasting time, relaxing, sipping coffee, watching the world go by. I'd say it doesn't get much better than Ljubljana. And then there's a lot more even beyond that. Just south of Ljubljana is this high arid limestone plateau called the Karst, and it's punctuated. It's this soft limestone that gets carved out over the centuries and the millennia by underground rivers. So it has some of the best cave systems anywhere on the planet. People from all over the world, geologists and spelunkers alike, love going to Slovenia because it's got some of the best cave systems you can tour anywhere. And it's all in this tiny area within basically, about a two-hour radius by car. If you're staying in Ljubljana, mm-hmm. you can get to virtually any part of the country that's worth visiting in just a two-hour drive. And finally, what I love about Slovenia is the people are just some of the, in my opinion, the friendliest people in Europe, if not the world. I just find Slovenes are this perfect combination, again, of sort of organized but also fun. You know, they're not too uptight, but they kind of know they have a work ethic and know how to get things done. But they also know how to kind of relax and have fun when the time comes. I describe them as very well-adjusted. It's the kind of country that would never... would never win a world war because they're too well adjusted even to try to start a world war. They just kind of go along with things, and as long as they get to sit out and enjoy their sip their coffee and follow their kind of quaint folk traditions here and there, that they're pleased to just kind of go along for the ride.
And I think one thing that most people don't know about Slovenia is the diversity of activities. I mean, Lake Bled is spectacularly beautiful. But, I mean, they have spas and skiing and all kinds of things in Slovenia year-round. But you mentioned the cave. But there are so many things to do in Slovenia that you can stay 3 weeks there. And even though it's so small, you still wouldn't have done everything.
I think that's exactly right. And that Lake Bled you mentioned, that's probably, if you're going to one place in Slovenia, that's where you should spend, you know, if you have 2 days for Slovenia, I'd spend them in Lake Bled, in that area. That's this gorgeous mountain lake that's in the foothills of the Julian Alps, which takes about an hour and a half to walk around the perimeter of this lake. But there's a cute little island in the middle with an old church, so you can take a traditional boat ride out to this island and climb up and ring this bell. There's a castle perched on the cliff right next to the lake. You can hike up or ride a taxi up to this castle for great views over the region. It's got, everything from a retirement palace of Tito, who was the Yugoslav dictator for life, right there on the banks of the sea, of the lake, all the way to some of the best desserts in Slovenia. People from Slovenia know that Lake Bled is where they make the best desserts. There's one, for example, that's a cream and custard cake called Pinchnita. That people literally flock from all over the country to Lake Bled to get this specialty. And it's all wrapped up in a very delightful, low-key package with a fantastic mountain backdrop. It's just really a charming place to to spend time. And then especially if you have a car, but even by public transit, it's a great launching pad for seeing the best part of the mountains of Slovenia. My favorite drive out of Lake Bled, for example, takes you up to an old mountain road called the Vršič Pass that was actually built by Russian prisoners of war back in World War I. You drive up this road with 24 switchbacks on the way up and 26 on the way back down, just to give you a sense of how mountainous and scenic this road is, with just breathtaking alpine vistas in every direction. And then along the way, there's some just really interesting sightseeing, too. There's this, for example, a little wooden Russian Orthodox chapel that was built to honor some of these prisoners of war who died during an avalanche while they were building this road that you're driving on. And then you come down the other end of this fantastic mountain road into a valley called the Socha Valley. It's known in Italian as Isonzo, and any historians might recognize the Isonzo Front. This remote river valley in the northwest corner of Slovenia was one of the most hotly contested fronts in World War I, going all the way back to the beginning of the 20th century. And there's lots of interesting sites, old deserted forts, for example, or there's a town called Kobarid, which is actually mentioned by Ernest Hemingway, who fought in or drove an ambulance during the fighting here back in World War I. He mentioned it in his book, Farewell to Arms. It has a fantastic museum about what happened here during World War I, and then above the town of Kobarid, there's this mausoleum that holds something like 7,000 Italian casualties of that war. So you've got this just spectacular mountain scenery juxtaposed with this lesson in World War I history, all wrapped up into a cute package. And it takes one day to do this driving loop from Lake Bled. You can see all that and be back in Lake Bled for dinner time. And so it's the compactness of the country makes everything even that much more appealing because you can see so much in just a day.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's been fabulous. Now, Slovenia is a little bit cooler as a world than Croatia. So do you maintain the same time frame as in Croatia, the same month, or would you go shorter period of time? Or
that's a great question. It is a very different climate. If you think Slovenia, they say that they're on the sunny side of the Alps, facing the Adriatic. So it's similar to the weather you might find in Austria or Bavaria or Switzerland, but a little bit sunnier, a little bit warmer because they're facing the sea and the southern exposure. But it feels the terrain and the landscape look a lot like Switzerland, let's say, or Austria. And therefore, the timing is not quite as crucial there. It is still pretty seasonal. It's more crowded in July and August, less crowded in May and October. But it's a little bit more of a year-round destination, so things don't entirely close down the way they do in some of the small Croatian towns in the winter. Actually, some areas like Lake Bled are major skiing destinations, so they have a whole other kind of wave of tourism that comes through in the winter. I would say, again, for Slovenia, I like to be there in May or June and September or October. I would say you can open that window a little bit wider for Slovenia. If you can go in October, you can get some just spectacular colors in the mountains. The leaves are starting to turn, usually in mid-October or so, for example. And the great thing about Slovenia that you already mentioned is it's undiscovered. Croatia, I think, is spectacular, but it's becoming very, very discovered, so you're not going to have it to yourself. Slovenia, while becoming more popular, certainly doesn't rank in terms of tourist visits with Croatia. And so it feels more like we call it a back door. Rick Steves, our company is technically called Rick Steves Europe Through the Back Door. That's a classic kind of backdoor destination that not everyone knows about. People haven't quite discovered it yet. So you have a little bit of a feeling that you've got the place to yourself, much more so than in Croatia.
Mm-hmm. Well, Cameron, again, we cannot thank you enough for being our guest. Your knowledge of this area is phenomenal. And would you like to tell our listeners on how they can get your books?
Certainly. The best place to find information for anything that we do at my company is our website at ricksteves.com, and that is www.ricksteves, that's ricksteves.com. And if you go there, you can find information about my guidebook, which is called Rick Steves Croatia and Slovenia, also covered in our Rick Steves Eastern Europe guidebook. We've also got information about our tours that go to the Adriatic. We also have one that's called Best of Eastern Europe that includes just a taste of Slovenia and Croatia. And everything else we do is also explained there at ricksteves.com.
Fabulous.
All right, great.
Well, thanks again for being our guest. We appreciate it very much.
Sure, thanks very much for having me.
Thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoyed the show. Be sure to listen to other great travel advice shows with Chris and Jerry at www.traveladviceshow.com.